once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and Jake. McClure.
Yes.
Yeah. I got that messed up.
Yeah, you did. We can't say our own names.
Yeah,
that's horrible.
Well, one mistake.
We did say our names. We just didn't say it the way we normally say it.
It's abnormal name saying. We're
just making excuses at this point. It was a horrible, horrible thing.
So this is the Personal Wealth Coach, which not coincidentally also happens to be a couple of guys who are the principals in an investment management firm. Who do this for a living and have done it for a long time. So if you'd like to have us, if you'd like to ask any questions or make any comments, you're certainly welcome to give us a call, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And I don't think people appreciate the fact that they can ask us a question and we don't charge them anything. We're fee only, which means we charge a significant amount of money, and you can actually figure this up since we charge a little less than 1%. And since our normal minimums for a new person walking in the door are $750 to $1 million, you can probably do your math and say that
one question on the air.
You should be able to ask it. If you can ask us questions, you're getting a pretty good deal here. So
we had a question at the end of last hour, and he talked about Enron and General Motors, and he said these companies, big companies, companies that we thought decades ago would be around for a very long time, went bankrupt. And what do we do, and then
what are the chances of an insurance company surviving 30 years? And actually,
great question.
My personal opinion, this is Jeff speaking,
but I tend to concur.
Since the key players in the financial collapse of
2008.
Well, but I need to give it, we say 1929, actually it occurred over longer, but let's just call it 2009 because that's when it was the worst aspects of it.
The key player
in the 2009 financial collapse,
insurance companies,
was AIG, and that's insurance companies. And they're the only sector of the major financial world in the United States that was not re-regulated. And as a result,
we still have the same weak footing.
Chances are happened again. And we really can. I think we're going to see insurance companies fail. Rising interest rates, insurance companies have more bonds than anything else. Rising interest rates have a negative effect on bonds. And yes, it's been a long time since we had a lot of insurance company failures. It's also been a long time since we've had a period of sustained interest rate increases. That's not coincidental.
The last question he had right before we went to break was, where can you put money in an annuity that's going to last 30 years? And there is an answer to that.
There is, at least in my opinion.
Well, let me define annuity first.
Right.
Annuity means, it's pretty simple, the actual word means payment annually. That's it. Something that will pay you every year.
Theoretically, year after year. In an annuity, you loan money to an organization, an entity. The entity promises to pay you back that money
in some form
on an ongoing basis. It's not like you put money in the bank and you can take a piece of it out.
It is in essence a simplified bond.
It's a bond that you can't liquidate.
Right. That's when
it's
I say simplified, it's
bond.
Non-callable. Now, you can't sell it on the open market easily. You can in some cases, but not. Generally speaking, you have to go back to the issuer of this bond to get the money back.
And if you annuitize, you generally can't get it back.
Right.
And there is another entity that you can loan money to. Now, they'll only pay you the interest. They won't pay you back the principal. And based on everything we know about the economy of the world today, there is one place you can put your money and expect for a 30-year period for them to give you a fixed interest rate with great reliability.
The U.S. government.
That's it. And the Constitution of the United States says you will be paid even if the government employees aren't paid.
Right. That the government employees are not listed in the Constitution as being paid. The Army is not listed in the Constitution as having to be paid for active duty. But debts to the federal government are in the Constitution.
And this is the key point. When I say this to people, they generally say, oh, yeah, but the interest rates of the government are so low. And it goes back to what I said last hour, and that is, the lower the risk, the lower the interest rate. Now, a lot of annuity companies, it's astonishing to me, are paying out annuities at an assumed rate of 4.5% or 5%.
If you compare that to the long-term rates anywhere else, you recognize without any problem, if you use that normal rule, the higher the interest rate, the higher the risk, you recognize that most insurance companies recognize that they may not be here in 30 years.
Yeah. And we have another caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Welcome back from your vacation. We missed you, both of us. So.
Oh, yeah, we have two listeners.
Okay.
I think we had two, and now we have three. So you have increased our ratings by 33%, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question I had, I read in the Drudge Report this morning that IBM is offloading, I think, like 100,000 employees off their insurance.
Off their health insurance, right.
Yep. I was wondering.
Now, they're offloading them, but they're paying them.
Right, they're giving them a lump sum. I guess from what I'm gathering, IBM is basically unloading the administrative costs. That's their savings.
Well,
it's what they've been doing for decades.
What they're doing is they're, in essence, giving them a voucher that says, we will give you a certain amount of money to go out and buy health insurance, and it's based on, oddly enough, Obamacare, because under Obamacare, it begins effectively next year, for IBM employees, the states, each state will have a marketplace where a person can purchase health insurance on a group basis. In other words, as an individual, if I go to buy health insurance right now, I'm going to pay a much, 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 much higher premium than I would if I were a member of a corporation that was in a group.
A cafeteria plan, if you will.
Yeah, and so Obamacare sets up beginning at the end of this year. Actually, it's supposed to be November 1st, but it's probably going to get bumped back to the beginning of 2014. The ability to go and shop for health insurance without regard to pre-existing medical conditions, and it's in a group purchase situation. And so what will happen is IBM is going to give its employees, or initially a test set of employees, a fixed amount of money per month, in the equivalent of a health care savings plan. In other words, they won't pay taxes on it. Neither IBM gets a tax deduction for it, but the employee does not pay taxes on this voucher, presuming...
As long as they use it for health insurance.
As long as they use it for health insurance. Well, actually, they can actually save the difference to pay deductibles and so on.
Right.
So actually, I know this is going to sound really strange, the end result is that the employee will be better off and IBM will be spending less money.
Right.
Does that make sense to you, caller?
Well, somewhat. I was wondering if y'all were in the doldrums on things that you wish to speak, if you could kind of explain in an apolitical sense, since right now defunding Obamacare is the drum beating loudly. I mean, I'm a person out here, I'm kind of confused. It appears to me that I see that, you know, for example, recently I believe it was UPS changed their policy about spouses.
Right.
And you're seeing like Subway and a lot of others are cutting employee hours so that they can get under that mandate.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's
and
not.
I guess I'm puzzled. I don't see how Obamacare is eventually going to benefit the consumer if people are not going to have a job to begin with or enough hours to buy things. I mean, I was just kind of wondering if you could explain from an apolitical viewpoint. You know, I know that's
well. Let me
sometimes, but I'd like to know.
Yeah,
is it a benefit?
The last can I get
yeah,
this? Okay.
Yeah.
The last caller mentioned something that's really important. We have had companies go bankrupt, and while Enron went bankrupt because of fraud, General Motors didn't go bankrupt because of fraud. It went bankrupt because of health care costs. And for that matter, the United States, eventually, if health care costs had continued unabated to rise as they have risen for the last 40 or 50 years, it would eventually bankrupt the country. There's no, and that's one of the things that I don't know anyone who's looked at the facts and the figures could argue with that. And the bottom line to it is, for instance, the cutting of spouses from... I guess it was UPS did that, right? Am I correct? Yeah. Was not because of Obamacare. Obamacare has absolutely no effect on spousal health insurance. It was simply because it was too expensive. And the issue is that health care costs have been rising at an unacceptable rate. By the way, for whatever it's worth, in 2012, for the first time in 50 years, health care costs per patient, and that's the way they're measured, did not rise. They've actually been coming down in their acceleration from 2009 forward, and you can look when the bill was passed. It was 2009. And you will note that the I'm not political on this. I'm not one way or the other on it. I'm simply looking at the numbers. And the number is the purpose in this bill passing, it's why it's called the Affordable Health Care Act, was to stop health care from becoming totally unaffordable. And so far, it may be purely coincidence that in 2009, when the bill was passed, the health care expenses started leveling off, and they finally have leveled off.
Now, let me come at this from a different direction. I'm going to come at it from two perspectives, both micro and macro. In order for us to give a comparison for Obamacare, we have to have another thing to compare it to. All we had was prior than Obamacare. So that's what I'm going to compare it to. The reason why rates were going up at the speed at which they were is because the law says, this is a law that most people agree with, if you have an emergency condition and you can't pay for the care, and you show up at an emergency room with blood spurting or with a heart attack or with some kind of advanced something nasty, the hospital has to take care of you. Now, this is in for-profit hospital. I mean, for not-for-profit hospitals, but also in for-profit hospitals that don't have a local hospital that they can refer you to that's a nonprofit. So the law is very clear here. If you have a nasty condition, the hospital's got to take care of you, knowing that they're not going to get paid. They have to raise the prices of other people's care. If you looked at, in a very apolitical, just numbers sense, if you looked at the cost of pre-emergency care in Travis County versus Bell County, these are local areas easy to look at, the cost of pre-emergency care, this is like airlifting somebody from an accident scene or an ambulance, in Travis County was about 2.5 times the cost of the same care in Bell County. And the reason was because more people in Bell County have insurance than people in Travis County. It's very simple. So they have to charge the people with insurance more money to care for the people that don't have insurance in Travis County. It causes the cost to come up. That's the simple problem. The complexity arises in how do you fix it? Long term, that system that was there was headed for disaster. There's no economist, no rational thinking person that thought just leaving that in place was going to get better, because as the population has gotten older and as we've had an illegal population growth, the price has come up drastically. Anybody that looks at their health insurance costs over the last 10 years will see the curve getting steeper until 2009, not shallower. It's a very simple reason. The young people were stopping getting insurance because insurance rates were going up. If young people don't get insurance, then the people that are older don't have those young people with better health to bring down the costs. So coming at it from that perspective, we had to do something. We had raw sewage as our healthcare system. That was it. Now we have Obamacare, which is raw sewage with a little bit of gold thrown in the middle of it. So don't get me wrong in me thinking that Obamacare is a wonderful thing. It is a piece of garbage, but it's a better piece of garbage than what we had before. From a micro perspective, as a small business owner or member of a small business ownership group, I have an existing health condition, and it's a severe one. If I were to not be a small business owner in a group, if I had been on my own, self-employed, there's no way I would have ever been able to get insurance. Mm-hmm. They would have not just not given me a high rate, they would have not given me insurance.
If I could inject something here as the father of the person who has the health problem.
Yeah.
Jake at one point was certified by the state of Texas so he could draw SSI. You know, he's permanently and totally disabled at one point. And this is, and why is he working? Well, he's
still
working.
Have the same condition.
He's working. He basically could not have gotten health insurance as an individual. But, you know, whether somebody would have hired somebody that's ill or not is questionable, but that's an interesting point at that time. So the bottom line to it is the fact that there was group health coverage available, which is a law passed, by the way. Group health coverage is a law that was passed to lower the cost of health insurance for employees of businesses. And in the process of passing that law, which, by the way, stuck a bunch of regulation into the healthcare system, a huge bunch of regulation, he is able to be employed. He is able to receive treatment for his condition. And as a result of the treatment for the condition, he is able to work productively and is not on the welfare rolls. This is, from my perspective, a microcosm of why, maybe not Obamacare, but why we need some kind of program that will allow everyone to have health insurance and spread the cost around.
Yeah, here this is the key thing. You said spread the cost around, and if you're talking about socioeconomic systems and you say those words, it means something. It means socialization. Nobody in their right mind doesn't recognize that. What a lot of people in their right mind do not recognize is that we were already there.
Yeah, Medicare is the hugest. Medicare is a single payer, socialized healthcare system, and I'm having a hard time finding anybody who objects to it.
Right, and if you go back to the system, even to people that weren't on Medicare before Obamacare, if the hospital has to raise prices on people that can pay to pay for people that can't,
they charge more to Medicare.
Well, not just that. We're talking about exactly a socialized system in a private insurance area. Not even talking about Medicare. If somebody comes in and cannot pay, they charge people that have private insurance more money.
And by the way, when it
that's
comes...
That's socialization. It already existed.
From a... We are apolitical. And we're vigorously apolitical. And the reason is to be political in our society today means to have strong opinions that are not necessarily backed up by facts. And what happens is in a political situation, any political situation, what you do is you make up your mind and then you go looking for facts to support your opinion.
Right.
Which is the way most people reason anyway. What we do and what our clients want us to do and what hopefully everybody wants us to do is look at the facts, assess the facts, and then arrive at an opinion.
And sometimes we never arrive at an opinion. Oh. Sometimes we just compare the facts and say both sides are kind of equally right on this or both sides are equally wrong.
And sometimes Jake and I just butt heads until the ground shakes and the staff comes along and closes the door until we get it worked out. And sometimes we never get it worked out. But here's the point. We look, as I said last hour, at long-term issues because, again, long-term and investing are synonymous. Short-term is speculating. If we look at long-term issues in the economy, we really would like to see them getting better. And in most aspects of the economy, that's true. There are two fundamental areas in the United States economy where the institutions themselves are very, very ill.
One of them, fortunately,
we're getting better pretty quick. The other one we're still pretty much ignoring.
Yeah.
One of them is healthcare. The price of healthcare, if you simply want to look, you look at the median pay that a physician got as opposed to everybody else in the economy 40 years ago, and then you come forward to today, there's no comparison. Physicians have become much, 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 much better paid individuals, and we say, and there's a very good reason for that.
Yeah. They have to learn a lot more.
Well, not just that they have to learn a lot more. It's even way beyond that, because if you take, for instance, the engineers who create software, they have to learn a lot too.
Yep.
But here's the point. The healthcare system for the last 40 years has been largely excluded from the economy, meaning the price of healthcare, if you go to a hospital, you don't, and they say you need an appendectomy, I'll just use a very simple term, or you have a broken leg, you do not go and shop around and say, I'm going to try four emergency rooms and compare their prices.
Not only that, but they don't even tell you the price at the time. They just say, do you want the procedure?
Yes. And the issue is that even if you have a procedure, you have something where you have something and you've planned in advance to have something done at a hospital or by a doctor, you don't shop for it.
Competitive rate.
So why shouldn't rates go up?
Of course they're going to go up. There's no competition. You show up at a doctor and they say you need a treatment, and you say, well, what are my options? And they say, you got to do this.
I got a bill from Scott and White the other day for an encounter. Encounter number 4067124-7-B.
That sounds like something out of Star Trek.
And I got it said that I owed this much for an encounter. And I was telling my wife, this is definitely a close encounter of the worst kind.
Right, yes.
But so we don't even know what we're paying for. And even I can go back to 30 years ago and tell you that I used to get bills from Blue Cross Blue Shield when I had them as an insurance company. And it was the same gobbledygook that was there before. There was no option for the marketplace to get involved.
Which means the prices are going to come up.
Now, here's the point. For all of the warts and pimples of Obamacare, and believe me, I think there are warts and pimples there, and I think that
some of them are big and hairy.
And I really hope that somebody can come up with a better alternative. They just haven't shown me one.
Yeah, there's just a repeal of it.
There is no alternative.
That's not an alternative.
In Obamacare, the plan is that individuals, and IBM is jumping on this with both feet quickly, individuals will have a certain amount of money either given them by their employer or by the government if they're very low income or somewhere, and they'll be able to go out and say, okay, here are the different companies that are competing in the marketplace to provide insurance for me. And I can go with a higher deductible and a little different set of package, and I can pay less money and then save the money so that I can pay the higher deductible, or I can go with the lower deductible and pay a higher premium. It is an opportunity to at least inject some of the marketplace into the system. Now, and this is the interesting thing about Obamacare. It was first conceived of and introduced by a guy named Ronald Reagan.
That's right.
Now, Congress wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole at that point.
Democratic Congress.
And then the guy who implemented it as a test case in government was Mitt Romney. It was his big push. He got it through. That's the model. And from the model that Ronald Reagan conceived of and Mitt Romney introduced, both Republicans, came Obamacare. Now, it's got a lot of other stuff hung on it because it's a bigger system. Do I think it probably needs to have some adjustment? Absolutely. Would
probably
I love to have an alternative proposed, for example?
Very much so.
You know, for instance, if the members of the House who are the Republican members of the House who are adamantly against Obamacare would present a different system that would accommodate a couple of things. Number one, there are now about 26 million people in the United States, the last number I heard, who are insured, who have health insurance, who if Obamacare was repealed tomorrow would suddenly not have health insurance. Folks, 26 million people will swing an election.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we're going to get away from it. The other side of this is that there are so many people, and that's in a pretty good-sized chunk of the working population, something like 16% the last I read, maybe a higher number now, are working full-time and have no health insurance. Now, those are the people who show up at the hospital. If you're really indigent, if you're really in bad shape,
you got Medicare.
You got Medicaid.
Medicaid, yes.
So you show up at the hospital, the bill gets paid by the government. if you are working full-time, and often two-worker families, and neither of your employer provides health insurance, you make too much money to be on Medicaid, but you have no health insurance, these are the people who are running the medical bills up at a very high rate of speed, because in many cases they don't receive preventative care. They don't receive, for instance, for type 2 diabetes, which is very common among lower-income people. They don't have it treated, so as a result, and this, you know, I have a member of my family who works in a hospital and sees this regularly, people show up, they've had an injury to their foot, for example. It didn't heal because they're type 2 diabetic. It became infected.
They
now,
didn't go to the doctor for a long time because they can't afford it.
And they didn't. They weren't being treated for their diabetes.
It would have been. It would have been a antibiotics and some diabetic treatment, which
well, even
runs
before that, before
low,
that,
low cost.
For instance, I take. I am a type 2 diabetic, and as a result, I take pills, and a doctor has advised me what I need to do, and I take this handful of pills, and as a result, I don't wind up in the hospital. But these people wind up in the hospital with an infection on their foot that has become gangrene. So now they get their foot or their leg cut off. Now you're talking about ICU. We're talking about maybe artificial limbs. And we're very likely talking about somebody who will never work again, who will be on Medicaid and welfare the rest of their life. Whereas had they had health insurance and had they had ongoing treatment, been able to afford to go to the doctor, get ongoing treatment for the type 2 diabetes, they'd still be working in the economy. Now, is this an experiment? Yes.
Well, this it's an experiment on something that we've all agreed upon. The way that we fund education in the medical world right now is after medical school, when the doctors begin their internships and their residency, the money for that comes from one place. And this is something that hospital administrators can call in and talk about, or doctors can call in and talk about. The money for that comes from Medicare. The U.S. government funds for one portion of medical training 100% of that training. We've all agreed on that. We said, oh, that's a good thing. It's a public expense. It's not something that you hear Republicans talk about and say this is a horrible thing. Nobody's talking about it because we've all just agreed that it's the case. Just like we don't say it's a bad thing that people that are dying should be treated. We say that's great. Yeah, we don't want people to die. So there are some agreements that are just in the background and people aren't coming out and saying this is the case.
And
there's an economic reality with that. That is that the government, if the government says that people have to be treated, then the government has to get involved in the payment process.
And the reality is, nobody that I know of who I've talked to seriously, no matter how far to the right they are, who actually is thinking about this, suggests that you can repeal Obamacare and do nothing. For, among other things, the Office of Management and Budget, it would be against the law to do so because the Office of Management and Budget said it would run our deficit up hugely. In other words, very frankly, under the law, the Balanced Budget Act of 1994, which was passed under the Newt Gingrich Congress, if Obamacare was repealed, the Congress would simultaneously have to raise the income tax rate by about 4%.
Yeah. So the kind of the conclusion to all of this, to wrap it up, is to say Obamacare has a lot of problems, but it's better than what we had before. We would really love to see an alternative.
Absolutely.
That has more competitive work in it, that has a lot of stuff for price comparison, that simplifies the marketplace.
If the Republicans in the House would get together, and that, by the way, is a contradiction in terms.
If they would do pro something instead of anti something.
And come up with an alternative. Remember, the motto in the House is repeal and replace. Okay,
that's fine. Anti-anti.
Tell me what it is. In other words, if they were to come out and say, here is our alternative to Obamacare. Here it is in a package, and we all have agreed on it. By the way, that is the problem at this point. They cannot agree on any given.
They can't even agree with the speaker who's supposed to be in charge.
If they were to come out with an alternative package that would be more marketplace-oriented, less intrusive into employers' rights, and I mean, there's 100 ways.
Mess up, change the prescription benefit plan, because a big danger out there.
And again, we're going on and on about this. Thought about it an awful lot. Let me tell you something that's critical. Whatever the intent was, and I certainly cannot talk about somebody's intent, and it was a massive massive support by the Republicans when George W. Bush proposed the prescription drug care benefit plan for people who were on Medicare. That was the most expensive entitlement program in the history of the United States.
Completely unfunded. It is going to be bigger than Medicare. It's going to be bigger than Social Security. So it's going to be bigger than both of them combined in about 25 years.
So the point is, you've got this looming avalanche coming of expense. It had to be addressed somehow or another. And I know you're going to think this is really goofy, but in my careful research of the origin of Obamacare and why it passed now, very simply, they had to find some way to fund the prescription health care benefit program. And there's a lot of complexities in this, including the fact that in the prescription health care benefit program, again, supported by the Republicans very heavily, proposed by a conservative Republican president, Medicare and Medicaid were forbidden to bargain with health care companies for group discounts on medications. I don't know if you knew that or not. In other words, the pharmaceutical companies could charge full retail to Medicare. Medicare was forbidden to bargain on the fact that they have this huge volume.
Yeah, it's basically Sam's Club, Costco, they do these group bargain things with the medication companies, and they get a very large discount, so people can go there and get the prescriptions at less than what Medicare is paying. But the person that's on Medicare doesn't pay, so it doesn't matter.
Right, and what happened is, in Obamacare, they changed that so that now when the government goes to pay for medications, it can bargain with the pharmaceutical companies.
This is a side note, because for a long time there, before the government really cracked down on it, people were buying medications from Canada. And the fascinating part about this is that they were buying the medications from Canada that were made in the United States. And they were buying them at very low prices, because Canada, as a group buyer, was able to negotiate the prices down from the pharmaceuticals so that they could sell the pharmaceuticals at lower prices in Canada, which people were illegally buying in the United States and having shipped back down. It's the same as Costco or anywhere else, but our own form of socialized medicine couldn't do the same thing, couldn't get the benefit.
It was forbidden by law.
Now, there's nothing that says that a pharmaceutical company has to sell medicine to Medicare. They can say no if the price is too low. They don't have to do it. Doctors don't have to accept Medicare as a payment. They can say, no, we're not going to take you as a patient, unless it's emergency room type situation.
And that, by the way, is another interesting point, is that neither doctors nor hospitals have to accept any of this. However, they can
say, well, we don't accept insurance at all. You have to pay in cash, or you have to pay in check or credit card.
The reality is they're going to do it. Now, this is a very complex answer to your question. The bottom line to it, though, it's a very complex system, and we are apolitical in this. We'd love to see an alternative that wouldn't bankrupt the United States brought to the fore by the business-oriented Republicans. I cannot even express how much I would love to see this come out.
The final part, the question is, what benefit? Somebody can tell you what benefit Obamacare is giving. And that's the toughest thing, because status quo, by definition, is not a benefit.
Well,
and what's going on here is it stopped something bad from continuing to get worse. It's still bad, though. So it's really hard to point out and say what's the benefit when it's still bad.
You've looked at our, I'm talking to Jake here, You've looked at, in our business, the cost of the group health insurance that we have for
yep.
employees.
Yep.
You've watched it rise over the years.
Oh, yeah.
Recently, it's leveled off.
It's leveled off. It's still rising just a little bit, but it's leveled off.
The point is, from our perspective, you ask, how can this be beneficial? I don't know. All I know is that when I look at the national numbers and they said this tremendous, you know, when I was looking at the rise in the cost of us paying for the health care for our employees.
It's painful.
We watched that rise, and it was real easy to project the point where we would no longer be able to provide health care for our employees, or we'd go out of business. And you know what? Last couple of years, it's leveled off.
Yeah.
And all I got to say is that when I have investigated why it leveled off, the credit by the insurance company we have, you're not going to like this, basically says the costs are leveling off because of, guess what?
Obamacare.
And that's all. That's as apolitical as you get. It's coming right out of my pocket.
There are places where the insurance rates are going up drastically. The unions are very upset about this, very upset, because part of what they included in their contracts with the companies going way back were these massively over-the-top healthcare systems that actually, in some cases, paid you money to go to the doctor. Not just the doctor, didn't just pay the doctor, but paid you
yeah.
money to go to the doctor. And part of Obamacare is raising the rates on what they call them Cadillac plans.
And there's also an aspect in the reason that the unions are complaining in some places the rates have gone up, in that if retirees are retained on the health care plan, the reason that their health insurance rates went up is because they're also paying for the retirees who have, because the unions have excluded them from receiving Medicare. They're basically getting Medicare plus the health care from the company.
Right.
And all of that's got to be straightened out. It is being straightened out. Basically, the costs are now being passed on to the people who are paying for the plan whereas before they weren't.
We've got some commercials to play. We've got some more stuff to talk about, and it's actually strangely related. We're going to be talking about how education is funded in the United States.
And I want to throw one other thing in here, and this is the unpleasant side, the real unpleasant side to Obamacare. If you talk to anybody in the healthcare community right now, you'll find something is either, they either hear about it or it's happening to them. They're not just seeing their pay run level. They're getting almost across the board pay cuts.
Yeah.
Scott and White has been laying off mid-level management, which means that the people are working harder for the same amount of money. Or in other cases, there are physicians, there are medical technicians across the board who are actually being paid less than they were last year, because of the fact that the money going to the healthcare system is actually decreasing per patient. And that is one of those things that we don't like it. The people in the medical care system certainly are feeling the pain, the horrible pain. Anytime that you're used to making, let's say a physician was making $300,000 a year, and they get a 10% pay cut, now they're making $270,000 a year. You might think, you know, from our perspective, you might think, well, whoopee-doo. But if they were spending the whole $300,000, they're feeling the pain right
Very
now.
Very much so.
Particularly if they bought a house, as many of them did.
Yeah, based on the income that they had, and the income has dropped now. That's not good.
And this is what's happening. Every medical institution where we have clients or we know anything about is seeing staff cuts, but the workload didn't go down, but they have fewer people doing it. By the way, that's called increased productivity.
And it's also caused a lot of unsatisfactory work environment.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, they're computerizing, and hopefully they, as a result, by the way, the medical world had a declining productivity for the last 30 years, and that sounds astonishing. But they did. While the rest of the economy was increasing productivity, the entire medical industry had a declining productivity. Well, guess what has reversed since 2009? So it's all very complex.
May I inject two things real quick
Certainly.
Before you go to your commercials?
Certainly.
If you wish to comment on the other side, that's
sure.
fine.
Sure, we got a lot of commercials to do, too.
Well, one thing, I have many family members in the medical profession, and speaking on long term, when they went to school many, many years ago, they told me there were like five applicants for every available school position.
Yeah.
They've told me that number has dropped significantly to something like 3-1. It appears that many of the best and brightest are no longer headed to the medical field.
Correct.
The other thing, you talked about cost. I know that on KTEM you're not supposed to use a W word, but if you ever listen to WBAP in Dallas, LASIK surgery seems to be very competitive.
Yeah, and the price
also
for that.
Cosmetic dentistry seems to be very competitive.
LASIK
Why are they able to inject market forces into those and you can't in other medical?
Because the government doesn't pay for it.
Yeah, government and most insurance companies don't pay for it. I got LASIK done about, 8 years ago. And it was really expensive at that point. It was about $2,000 an eye. If you go back just a few years before that, it was $3,000 an eye. And if you look at it now, it's about $1,000 an eye. And the techniques have gotten better because they have to compete. I did shop around. I went to multiple places. I did a lot of research. And I said, okay, this is the place I'm going to go because the money was coming from my pocket.
Mm-hmm. Anything, any medical procedure where people have to pay out of pocket has seen the same thing that's happened in the rest of the economy where technology is involved. The price has come down.
But then wouldn't that, I know I'm very simplistic, but would not then the answer to be more market force?
Absolutely.
Yes. Solutions?
Absolutely. And that's what we were recommending.
And
if they're going to replace Obamacare, that's the way to do it.
This is
y'all got to get to your commercial.
But let me put something out here. Right now, there is no market force in the healthcare industry, okay, in the major portion of it. What Obamacare does is it injects a far larger market force into the industry than we've ever had since we were paying strictly out of pocket without insurance.
Right.
And it puts far more market forces into the system than any other developed country on the planet. In other words, you can, under Obamacare, once it gets next year, goes into full effect theoretically, you'll be able to go out and pick your own insurance company, and the ratings on the insurance companies will be probably widely published. That's already going on now. The satisfaction ratings on the insurance companies are being published already. So that you'll be able to go out and say, this company provides better service and it has a lower cost, I'm going with that one. That's not full market control, but the company then that does that will have a better ability to go in and bargain to get the prices down in the marketplace. Right now, there is no market-based incentive to lower prices. Only the government is trying to lower prices, and Lord knows that's inefficient. And that's why I say, if we could come up with a better program than that, I'd love to see it. Thank you for calling.
Yes, that was
appreciate
a great call.
Good question.
We
Thank
only
you very
talked
much.
On that for most of an hour.
Yeah, and you can tell we've been thinking about this an awful lot. Okay, take care.
Thank you for answering
my
question.
Bye-bye. And we're going to break for commercials. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and if we had anybody listening, I think they probably left anyway. But and I want to emphasize something before we go to commercials, and that is we are not pro-Obamacare per se, as saying we are pro, let's do something to fix this situation. It is absolutely impractical to say let's go back in time to a situation where we deny health care to a lot of people because that runs the costs up. Every study out there says it. So if somebody comes up with a better solution, man, we're likely to support it wholeheartedly. And I would love, and I've said this to every serious Republican that I know who really wants to take back control of the government. It's very simple. Come up with a better system and sell it.
Yeah. Basically, what the Republicans are doing right now are what the Democrats did at the height of George W. Bush's popularity. And I realize that Obama is losing a lot of popularity. But the Democrats decided to be for something. And they started pushing that agenda rather than just being anti-Bush. As soon as they went for something, they got a lot of momentum. As long as we are anti-Obama, or anyone is anti-Obama, as long as the Republicans are anti-Obama, you can't get anything done by being anti-something. Right. You have to be for something.
And when you've got 25 million people that you say, if we take power, we will remove your health insurance.
Yeah.
That's
a little bit of an uphill battle there.
And by next year, there'll be a lot more people. So it's not like you can turn around and expect to win an election by telling people you're going to take their health insurance away from them. I don't think that's going to work. And I would really love to see, I'm a Republican, I've got Republican stamped on my voter ID card, and it's been as long as I've been voting.
I'm not even independent. I am no party.
And the point is that I would love us to see to sit down and come up with a better plan. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We only got about a little over a minute left in the program today. I did want to mention one last item. Something interesting happened. The first major cargo transit around the north of Russia, the Northwest Passage, if you will, where a Chinese cargo ship picked up a very large load of cargo in Asia along the coast, and then is about to finish crossing over through the Arctic because of the melting ice,
uh-huh,
and making its deliveries in Europe, and it cut 2 weeks off the transit time and avoided attack by pirates.
Pretty nice.
So things are changing in the bid-wide world. So this is the Personal Wealth Coach.
If you'd like to contact us off the air, we are available by email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, tpwc.com, as in the Personal Wealth Coach, and listen to podcasts and so on. If you want to contact us by voice, we have voicemail waiting on the weekend. It's live answer during business hours, but locally at 947-1111. Or toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN.
Until next week, this has been
the Personal Wealth Coach.
KTM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.